Chapter 30. 0440 hours, September 13, 2552, revised date, military calendar. Aboard hybrid vessel, Ascendant Justice Gettysburg, station keeping in Eridanus system. Time was running out. Dr. Halsey could feel the Covenant nearly upon them, and her window of opportunity shrinking to a pinpoint. Only a few more things to take care of before she could go. Before she started something she couldn't stop. Someone approached the clean room. Heavy footfalls that could only be a Spartan in Majolnir armor. Kelly appeared and waved from the other side of the glass partition that separated the clean room from the rest of Medical 4. Dr. Halsey buzzed her in.
"Reporting for treatment, Doctor," she said.
Kelly hesitated a moment as she glanced about at the unsterile environment the doctor had been working in. Styrofoam cups littered the surgical instrument trays. Thermal printout paper curled from the biomonitors, and the radiation-emitting crystal they had found on Reach sat on a nearby instrument tray.
"I thought that crystal was in the reactor room," Kelly said, "behind plenty of radiation shielding."
"It's perfectly safe," Dr. Halsey said, "as long as we're in normal space." She picked up the crystal and slipped it carelessly into her lab coat pocket.
"Lie down, please, Kelly."
The doctor gestured to the contoured treatment chair.
"Just a few more injections and we're done with your burn therapy."
Kelly sighed and eased herself onto the reclined chair. Dr. Halsey removed a cloth covering a pair of injectors. She clicked them into the ports on Kelly's Majolnir armor ports that threaded directly into her subclavian and femoral veins.
"Keep doing your physical therapy, and the dermacortic steroids will remove most of the scarring and restore your full mobility within another week," she explained.
"A week!" Kelly growled and struggled to rise. "Doctor, I need to be 100% ASAP. The chief has a mission."
Dr. Halsey activated the injectors, and they hissed their contents into Kelly's body. She relaxed and slumped back on the table, unconscious.
"No, Kelly," Dr. Halsey whispered. "You're not going on the chief's mission. You're going on mine."
The sedative in her bloodstream would knock out an ODST in peak condition for the better part of a day. Halsey estimated that Kelly would be unconscious for a little more than 2 hours. By that time, they'd both be far enough along that there'd be no turning back. Dr. Halsey swiveled one of the displays to face her. She executed the memory erase command, wiping clean Cortana's recollection of the research they had done on old ONI lockdown codes. She folded the printout of their results and stuffed it into her pocket.
"Cortana?"
"Yes, Doctor,"
she replied. Her voice, through the room's speakers, sounded distracted.
"Locate Corporal Locklear and have him report immediately, please."
"Done, Dr. Halsey."
"Thank you, Cortana. That will be all."
She added in a whisper so low that only she heard,
"Take good care of them all for me."
Dr. Halsey adjusted the examination table so it lay flat, and then loaded medical supplies and equipment onto its undercarriage. She placed a bag with 4 submachine guns and 16 full clips of ammunition on top of the supplies. She found a lukewarm cup of stale coffee and gulped it down to the dregs. Corporal Locklear appeared at the open entrance to the prep room.
"Hey, Doc, Cortana said you needed me,"
he said tersely. He smoothed his hand over his shaved head.
I'm kind of busy right now, so if this can wait..."
"Whatever you're doing," Dr. Halsey told him, "this is more important." She nodded to Kelly's prone form. "I need your help getting Spartan 087 to the launch bay."
"Is she okay?"
he asked, and took a step toward her.
"She's fine. But I have to transfer her to the asteroid base. They have a piece of equipment necessary to complete her treatment."
Locklear appeared unconvinced.
"But I just saw her."
"She's fine," Dr. Halsey assured him. "Just sedated. This procedure is unpleasant, even for a Spartan."
Locklear looked into Dr. Halsey's eyes and then nodded, accepting this explanation. He moved the head of the table and wheeled it through the doors, the med bay, and out into the waiting elevator. Dr. Halsey followed on his heels. When the elevator doors closed, she turned to the corporal.
"Your hand, please."
He looked puzzled, but held out his hand. Dr. Halsey took it and turned it palm up. She set the long, luminous blue artifact in his grasp. The light emitted by the alien artifact shone onto their faces and made the interior of the elevator colder.
This is what the Covenant so desperately want. They tore up Reach to get it. They followed us into slipspace, and Pulaski died protecting this thing.
She watched Locklear carefully, gauging his reaction, and saw that he pulled away slightly at this last remark. It had hit home.
And what the hell am I supposed to do with it?
Keep it safe, she told him. Guard it with your life, because if the Covenant ever get it, they'll be able to jump through slipspace 100 times faster than they can now. Do you understand?
Locklear closed his large fist around the crystal.
Not really, Doc, but I can take care of it.
He paused and wrinkled his forehead in confusion.
But why me? Why not ask one of your Spartans?
My Spartans, Dr. Halsey replied in a whisper, could be ordered to hand it over to Lieutenant Haverson, and he'd risk getting it back to ONI Section 3, even if he had to gamble that the Covenant might get it.
Locklear snorted.
Well, as much as I don't like L.T. Whitebread, I'd hand it over if ordered too. What's the big deal, anyway? We're almost home.
Almost, Dr. Halsey repeated, and she gave him a slight smile. But the moment you jump, this crystal emits radiation like a signal flare. The Covenant will find the ship, and maybe this time they'll win the battle in slipspace.
Locklear grimaced. She held his steely gaze a moment and then finally let go of his hand.
So I know you'll do whatever it takes to prevent this object from falling into enemy hands.
He nodded grimly.
I read you, Doc. Loud and clear.
There was a hint of respect in his voice.
I know what I have to do. Count on it.
Good, she said.
The elevator doors parted. Locklear stuffed the crystal into his ammunition vest, and Locklear wheeled the table into the Gettysburg's launch bay.
Where do you want her?
The bay was a beehive of activity. 100 of Governor Giles's crew jogged to and from passages, carrying datapad schematics and field multiscanners. Robotic dollies carried fat Archer missiles, spider-like Antelon mines, and slender pods of deuterium fuel for the Gettysburg's auxiliary reactors. 3 longsword fighter craft were being repaired. Exoskeletons thudded along the deck, carrying plates of titanium and welding them in place.
There, Dr. Halsey told Locklear. Take her to that ship.
She pointed to Governor Giles' Chiroptera-class vessel. It sat on the deck, looking like a sleeping bat. Its oddly angled stealth surfaces blended into the shadows. Locklear shrugged and pushed the loaded gurney. Dr. Halsey halted by the ship's port hatch. It was sealed so tightly that no seam could be discerned. She retrieved the thermal printout from her coat and rechecked its contents. She then touched a recessed button on the hull, and a tiny plate slid aside, revealing an alphanumeric keyboard. Dr. Halsey typed in a long string and pressed enter. The hatch parted with a hiss. She smiled.
Not even Cortana could crack their crypto, indeed.
She waved Locklear inside. Locklear obliged her and pushed the gurney into the ship. Dr. Halsey followed, secured the examination table, and escorted Locklear outside. She turned and headed back into the vessel. He started back toward the elevator, then halted.
Doc, when we were talking, you said, when you jumped to slipspace. You meant, when we jumped to slipspace, didn't you?
Dr. Halsey locked eyes with him for a moment. Then she touched a button inside the ship, and the hatch hissed closed between them. The Master Chief stepped off the elevator and onto the bridge of the Gettysburg. Lieutenant Haverson and Admiral Whitcomb stared at the displays at Weapon Station 1 and Engineering.
Sirs, the Chief said.
The Admiral waved him forward without bothering to look up. The Chief had 2 tasks. First, he would inform the Admiral of his first strike mission plan. He had to convince him there was no risk to their primary goal of returning to Earth, and a huge payoff if they succeeded. The only thing Admiral Whitcomb might object to was the high risk to his team. The Chief's second task would be more difficult.
he touched the belt pouch containing Dr. Halsey's data crystals. One was her analysis of the flood infection mechanism and a possible way to block it. The second data crystal contained the source files of that discovery, and according to Dr. Halsey, it would lead to Sergeant Johnson's undignified and unnecessary death. And yet, if it gave Section 3 a better chance to stop the flood, if indeed that threat had any meaning after the destruction of Halo, maybe it was worth one man's life. Maybe if Sergeant Johnson knew, he'd volunteer. The chief's duty was clear. He had to hand over all files to the lieutenant. But deep down, he had to admit that it didn't feel right.
Cortana! Admiral Whitcomb crossed his arms over his barrel chest. Give me an update on our power!
Cortana's tiny image flickered to life on the holopad near the nav station. She crossed her arms over her chest, much as he had, and minute red symbols raced over her glowing lavender skin.
Status is nearly identical to my last report 5 minutes ago, Admiral. Tests on Ascendant Justice's reactor and the Gettysburg's engines are in sync, and will be completed in 40 minutes.
Hurry, the Admiral growled. I don't want to get stuck without power when unfriendlies show up. I want to get underway to Earth. Weapon status?
Aye, sir, Cortana said. Plasma turret 1 is obliterated. No possibility of repair. Plasma turrets 2, 3, and 4 are repaired, and although I'm waiting for power to test them, I have run 312 virtual test firings without incident. Turrets 5, 6, and 7, however, require parts Governor Giles does not have in his inventory. 2 Archer missile pods on the Gettysburg have been refilled. That gives us 16 missiles hot and ready to go, sir.
I'd like to know where Giles got those missiles, Lieutenant Haverson muttered. They're UNSC military contraband.
He is a pirate, Lieutenant, Cortana said.
Good work, the Admiral told Cortana. Keep me posted.
He turned toward the Chief.
You had something, Master Chief?
Before the Master Chief could speak his mind, Haverson said, Admiral! He pointed at the forward screens and at the Chioptera-class ship accelerating away from the Gettysburg's launch bay.
I thought Giles was staying on board to oversee repairs.
So did I, the Admiral said. Cortana, did you catch Giles leaving on surveillance?
No, sir, but you might be interested in this.
On the screen, a grainy video appeared of Locklear, Dr. Halsey, and a Spartan on a gurney boarding the ship.
Locklear left them at the ship, sir. Dr. Halsey and Spartan 087 departed.
Cortana! The Admiral barked. Hail that ship, now!
Hailing.
Governor Giles appeared on forward screen number 1.
Admiral, he said with a nervous smile, I just saw my ship leave the launch bay. Perhaps you can explain why you commandeered my personal property when I have showed nothing but good faith in this...
Hold on to your shirt tail, Governor! Admiral Whitcomb snapped. I'm in the middle of finding out who took your ship and what precisely is going on. Cortana, any response to our hail?
An automated code, sir, she said. Her mouth opened in astonishment. UNSC code 392.
392? The Admiral asked.
He stared into space, trying to recall the obscure code. The Master Chief cleared his throat and told him,
Admiral, that is an official non-response code, sir. Special warfare teams use it to ignore hails due to a higher priority mission.
God damn it!
The Admiral's face flushed and he ground his teeth.
You mean the good doctor just told me to go to hell?
On the forward screen, the Chioptera, its bat-like wings nearly invisible against the black of space, accelerated in a sudden burst. Pinpoints of light appeared around the craft that elongated and smeared. The ship vanished.
A slipspace transition, Cortana said.
I thought you told me, the Admiral said, slowly turning on Haverson, that ship was locked down, that vital components were removed when it was decommissioned, that there was no way it could make a slipspace jump.
Yes, sir, I did.
And would you care to explain why that ship just disappeared, Lieutenant?
Yes, Admiral, I was wrong.
Haverson replied without meeting the Admiral's eyes.
Dr. Halsey apparently found a way to circumvent the ONI lockout on the ship's systems.
On screen, Giles said,
This is most unfortunate, Admiral.
I expect to be compensated.
You bet it's unfortunate, Admiral Whitcomb said. If I'd known there was a chance we could have used that ship to jump to Earth, I would have done it an hour ago. Cortana, what was her trajectory?
Not Earth, Cortana said. Dr. Halsey's course points to no known system in my database.
The Admiral scrutinized the forward screen. Giles's face, the empty starfield, and the frozen video of Dr. Halsey and Locklear in the launch bay.
I want Corporal Locklear on the bridge 10 minutes ago! Lieutenant Haverson, have Cortana locate him. Then I want you personally to escort that ODST up here.
Haverson swallowed.
Yes, sir.
He marched to the elevator, and Cortana told him,
He's on B deck, Lieutenant. Medical storage. He's not answering my comm page.
The elevator shut.
Chief, you're on the engineering console,
the Admiral said.
Cover the nav station, too.
Yes, sir. He moved to the engineering station's monitors. There were 35 minutes to go on the shakedown cycle of the reactors and engines.
Contact, Cortana said. Bearing 030 on the solar plane. Two Covenant cruisers. They're not moving. Maybe they haven't spotted us.
And it never rains when it can monsoon, the Admiral declared. They can't help but see us, Cortana, with all the radio chatter, ships and leaking radiation. I bet they're just figuring out how best to kill us.
Governor Giles turned to someone off-screen and then said, Admiral Whitcomb, given this new development, I would like to evacuate my people off the Gettysburg and out of harm's way.
Of course, Governor, do what you have to do.
The number 3 screen snapped off, and the stars reappeared.
And I'll do what I have to, too, Admiral Whitcomb said. Cortana, halt the reactor and engine shakedown.
Sir, there are risks.
I want them online now. Don't tell me what the risks are. Just do it.
Yes, sir, she said.
Master Chief, get this crate ready to move and stay on your toes. We'll need every trick in the book to outmaneuver 2 cruisers.
Affirmative, Admiral. The chief observed the shakedown cycle halt and Ascendant Justice's reactors restart. Radiation indicators redlined and then dropped to a hairbreadth, which was technically considered safe. The Gettysburg's engines shuddered to life. The chief felt the vibration through the deck half a kilometer away.
Reactors are hot, sir, he reported.
The Admiral watched as Giles's fleet of single ships and technicians in jetpacks abandoned the Gettysburg, swarming across the dark of space back to the safety of their asteroid.
Rats leaving a sinking ship? He wondered aloud.
The Master Chief wasn't sure if that was a question directed at him, but he decided to reply anyway.
They're just men who want to live, sir.
The Admiral nodded.
Covenant cruiser accelerating, Cortana announced. Bearing on a vector out system. It's transitioning to slipspace.
Master Chief, get this tub moving. Now! Bring us up to half maximum speed.
Aye, sir.
He tapped in commands, answering one half forward. The radiation warning on Ascendant Justice's reactor flickered, but stabilized and subsided. The combined mass of the 2 attached ships groaned as their recently repaired superstructures overcame their inertia.
Heat up our plasma turrets, Cortana!
Her
translucent lavender hologram faded to ice blue.
Sir, additional contacts at system's edge. 3. No. Additional transitions from slipspace. Counting 18. Now 30 Covenant ships of various classes. Position 030, 091, 180. Sir, they have us enveloped.
The star chart vanished in a wink, and a map of the Eridanus system appeared with tiny triangles representing Covenant ships now encircling the perimeter. The map turned to a side profile and revealed half a dozen additional ships scattered along the nadir and zenith of the system. Admiral Whitcomb stared at the map and shook his head.
You know the story of the Alamo, Chief?
Yes, sir. A famous siege with a handful of defenders holding off overwhelming forces.
The Admiral smiled.
Texan defenders, Chief. There's a big difference. Colonel William Barrett Travis, with 155 men, held off more than 2,000 Mexican invaders. They hunkered down inside a tiny fort and fought like wildcats. Travis got a handful of reinforcements later. 32 men.
The Admiral's smile faded.
You know there were 15 civilians inside that fort, too?
He looked at the map again.
Well, when the fighting was over, Travis and his men were dead, but it cost the enemy 600 lives.
Like the Battle of Thermopylae, the chief remarked.
But they were survivors at the Alamo. They let the civilians live.
He turned to the chief.
You think anyone's going to survive this fight? You think there's any way to win?
The Master Chief tried to think of a way to fight and to win. 30 Covenant ships against their damaged hybrid vessel. Add to that the need to defend Governor Giles's crew. Could he board one of the Covenant craft? Get Cortana to infiltrate their systems and broadcast falsified orders? They would see him approaching. Or was there a blind spot he could approach from? How could he hide from the rest of the ships in their fleet, though? And by the time he could implement such a plan, the Gettysburg would be molten slag.
It was a rhetorical question, Chief, the Admiral said.
Yes, sir, the Chief replied. Given our situation, resources, and our enemy's determination, then, no, I see no way to win or survive.
Neither do I, Admiral Whitcomb stood straight. Cortana, get ready to jump. Chief, accelerate to flank speed, course 055 by 290. Prepare to transition out of normal space on my mark.
Aye, sir, the chief and Cortana answered in unison.
We're just leaving Governor Giles and his people?
Cortana asked. Admiral Whitcomb was silent a long moment, and then he replied,
We are. This isn't the Alamo, and I'm not Colonel William Barrett Travis, although I dearly wish I were. No, we're running. We're trading hundreds of lives for billions.
The Master Chief absent-mindedly reached for his belt pouch, and Dr. Halsey's data crystals clinked. Is this the right thing to do, sir?
The right thing? Admiral Whitcomb sighed. Hell, son, it probably isn't. Personally, I'd prefer to fight and die fighting and take every one of those Covenant bastards with me. But I do not have the liberty to make that choice. My duty is clear, to protect the men and women of Earth, not a pack of privateers and outlaws.
He closed his eyes and said,
The logic of the situation is also too damn clear. Even if we stay and fight, they'll all be just as dead.
Capacitors at full charge, Cortana announced. Preparing to enter slipspace. Waiting for your order, sir.
The Master Chief saw the energy from Ascendant Justice's reactor drained to 5%. Motes of blue-green light appeared on the forward screen, and the stars stretched and smeared like watercolors. But something was wrong. The shields of the Chief's Mjolnir armor rippled. The radiation monitors spiked. Where was it coming from?
Hundreds for billions, the Admiral whispered. Duty be damned. I'm still gonna burn in hell for this.
Admiral Whitcomb inhaled deeply and closed his eyes.
Go, Cortana, get us out of here. And God forgive me.
Corporal Locklear whistled, and the robotic dolly obediently followed him. The rolling robot was stacked with rifles, pistols, ammunition crates, and enough C-7 foaming explosive to blow a half-kilometer crater in the side of the Gettysburg. He made his way to the cargo elevator, and then down to B-deck. He had seen on the Gettysburg's inventory that that was where they stored medical supplies, and he wanted a few cans of biofoam handy for the Master Chief's extremely well-planned suicide mission. Not that Locklear had anything against a good suicide mission. He'd been on plenty before, and they seemed to give him the most bang for his buck. Only now, after so much fighting, he just wanted a break. 24 hours of sleep and some R&R. He idly tugged at the bandana tied to his biceps.
Damn, girl, he whispered. Why'd you have to die? I had plans for you and me.
What was he doing mooning over a woman? And a Navy flyer to boot? His squad would have laughed themselves wet if they knew. Only they were all dead, too.
Screw this, Locklear said. I'm still alive. I'm not going to die, and I'm not going to feel guilty for any of this.
He laughed and told himself.
It's not like the entire universe hasn't been trying to kill me off, though.
Locklear turned to the robotic dolly.
Right, amigo?
Its tread spun, and the flatbed dolly turned to the right.
No, stop!
He sighed. Man, I gotta buy myself a ticket out of this outfit. Next thing I'll be asking one of the Spartans out on a date. If I could even tell the boys from the girls in that squad. He shuddered.
The doors of the large cargo elevator squeaked open. Locklear stepped off and whistled for the dolly to follow. Storage Bay 2 had racks and shelves that rose from the deck 5 meters to the ceiling. He played his flashlight over the uneven surfaces. He spied a desk and terminal in the corner.
"Hello, inventory control," he said. "The place to go for goodies in any Navy outfit."
He strode to the desk, sat down, and tapped in a search for medicinal-grade ethyl alcohol. A tone chimed in his earpiece, and Cortana's voice said,
"Corporal Locklear, I have an urgent request from Admiral—"
Locklear squelched his calm.
"Enough chatter, lady," he murmured. "The bar just opened."
The location for Med 34 CH3CH2OH popped on screen.
"B-I-N-G-O," he sang.
Locklear jumped up.
"Come on, amigo. You and me are going to throw a party."
The deck lurched under Locklear's feet.
"What the? We're moving?"
He turned the inventory display to face him and tapped in a command to switch to external camera mode. Craggy asteroids moved past them. No, it was the Gettysburg that was moving. Locklear squinted and saw a flash of blue. He magnified that part of the screen and found a dozen blurry blue flares from engine cones and the pulsing lateral lines filled with plasma. Covenant ships.
"Ah, hell," he said and backed away from the desk. "So much for happy hour."
Something moved in his vest. Locklear reached in his pocket and pulled out the crystal Dr. Halsey entrusted to his care. The elongated stone rippled. Facets moved and rearranged like the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. He spied the same blue color on the inventory monitor. Pinpricks of stretched space. The first indication of a slipspace jump.
"I'm not going through another slipspace fight," Locklear said through gritted teeth. "I'm not going to let them follow us. Or let this thing shoot off a signal flare to every Covenant ship in the galaxy."
He grabbed a can of C7 off the dolly and dropped Dr. Halsey's crystal on the deck. He quickly covered the thing with a foaming explosive. It hardened to a stiff resin in a matter of seconds. Locklear grabbed a detonator, inserted it into the foam, and connected it to a timer. Why had the doc given him this to guard? She said because the ONI spooks wouldn't have the guts to get rid of it if they had to, would maybe even let it fall into Covenant hands. That made sense, but at the same time, there was something not quite right with that explanation. Locklear looked at the monitor and the pinpoints of light that now almost blotted out the stars. Screw it. He had his own reasons to blow this thing up, like not wanting to die in another space battle. Like maybe getting some payback for Pulaski's death. The Covenant rat bastards wanted it so bad? Well, screw them, too.
"This one's for you, Pulaski," he whispered.
Locklear set the timer for 3 seconds and punched the countdown. He dived for cover behind the robotic dolly and covered his head. The brilliant flash of sapphire light was the last thing he ever saw.